Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. On our roundtables, we regularly ask how the media covered an issue or an event, in this case, the Republican National Convention. But today we are asking, why are major media outlets failing to adequately cover the convention and the Republican Party's far-right agenda? You have to go to The Daily Show to get an accurate read of what is going on. Here is a clip they played on Wednesday night about the unity message we heard from across the broadcast media.
The attack on Trump has changed the storyline and the tone of this convention, with the former president calling for unity.
Something has fundamentally shifted here.
This is going to be a different tone.
This is going to shift what we are hearing from every single person who takes the stage.
It is about unity. It's about coming together and supporting one another now.
More trying to lower the political temperature here.
It's like a wholly different convention that we're going to see.
I think that bullet grazed his ear, but it impacted his heart.
The Daily Show then played a clip of the unifying messages we heard at the convention.
The Democrats' disastrous record on crime, trade, and regulation has ruined the lives of countless Minnesotans.
Your family is less safe.
Biden's violent crime crisis.
Our children are dying.
War on families.
Woke indoctrination.
Trampled underfoot by the radical left.
Biden and the Democrats are doing everything they can to tear down this great country.
America cannot afford 4 more years of a Weekend at Bernie's presidency.
On the fourth and final day of the convention last night, Donald Trump gave his speech. He called for the mass deportation of millions of undocumented immigrants, more oil and gas drilling, once again referred to COVID as the China virus, even after we've seen so many attacks against the Asian community. He falsely claimed that the influx of, quote, illegal immigrants would bankrupt Social Security and Medicare, and also lied about the surge in crime fueled by migrants crossing the border. So what explains this? Why are the media failing to cover Trump's history of lies and racist and homophobic rhetoric? And we should say it's not just broadcast media. This morning on Twitter, a number of people are posting front page newspapers. The Boston Globe, here's the headline. In a departure, Trump calls for unity, healing in America. The Dallas Morning News, Trump emphasizes unity. The Pioneer Press, Trump takes a unity tone. USA Today, after attempt on life, can Trump unite US? Joining us to talk about this are three guests. Alex Shepard is senior editor of The New Republic, where he's covered politics and culture since 2015. His work has appeared in many publications, including GQ and The Nation. Hi, Alex. Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here.
Great to have you. Jet Heer is a national affairs correspondent for The Nation and host of the weekly Nation podcast, The Time of Monsters. He also pens the monthly column Morbid Symptoms. Hi, Jeet. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
And Mark Jacob is a freelance writer and former Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sunday editor at the Chicago Sun-Times. Mark Jacob was the first website editor for the Medill Local News Initiative and is co-author of 8 books on history and photography. Hi, Mark. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Mark, what explains this? We're not going to ask how they covered it. We're going to ask, why are they failing again?
Because it's easier to fail. It's easier to hand over the programming for 4 days to a political party and not do journalism, not do real journalism, which is value added, which is fact checking, which is context, which is statistics. You know, I mean, this whole thing about how there's there's runaway crime. There's, you know, crime is skyrocketing, which was said over and over without challenge, you know, in those 4 days. That's just a plain old fact that that's not true. I mean, the statistics are right there. And so, but for the news media, the reason, to answer your question, the reason the news media don't do it is because it's harder and because it sets them up as adversaries to the people they're covering. And they don't want to do that. They just kind of want to, in effect, they end up amplifying the lies instead of challenging them.
Even after 8 years of this, though, I mean, we've been talking about this all week, Mark, that someone like Liz Cheney, Dick Cheney's daughter, is no longer welcome in today's Republican Party. I mean, this party has shifted so much. It's not an opinion. It's just a fact.
Well, the thing about it is that that, you know, there's unity among the Republicans. There's unity that they don't point out. The news media very rarely points out that the reason we have a new guy who's running for vice president is because the previous guy was targeted to be hanged in front of the U.S. Capitol. Or they don't point out that the reason there's unity is because Trump has called for Liz Cheney to be tried in a military tribunal for unspecified charges. So they've banished anyone who actually was not, you know, didn't like buy into the whole fascist mentality. That's unity.
Jeet, why don't you jump in here? What do you think explains this?
Well, I mean, everything Mark just said is accurate. I would add some of this has to do with access journalism, and particularly I think there's a strong sense that Trump, who's been leading in the polls for many months and who's been strengthened by the weakness of Joe Biden and possibly strengthened, although the polls don't bear this out, by the assassination, is going to be the next president. And you want to, I think a lot of the major outlets want to position themselves so that they continue to have access to the incoming Republican administration. And that means giving them sort of beat sweeteners. That means giving them opportunities to put out their message when they can. And so, yeah, you have had a very poor coverage of a convention, which, like, if one had historical context, is a very bizarre convention, because usually conventions that unify the party, you have the full spectrum of the party. That includes former presidential candidates, you know, like Mitt Romney and George W. Bush were not there. And you have, like, the spectrum of politicians in the party, and you also honor the party's past. You say we're the party of Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Eisenhower, Reagan. This was like 4 days of just everyone celebrating Trump and being a personality cult of Trump, frankly. And that's actually like a really odd, unique development in a political party. It's news. It's actually like a new development and should have been reported as such.
Instead, you have Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
Giving a major speech last night.
Well, that's the other aspect. I mean, this is a novel aspect to have so much like entertainment aspect. In which case, I mean, like Trump was clearly very excited that Hulk Hogan was there and was frankly bored when a lot of the politicians, including his vice presidential pick, were speaking. And that also says something about where the Republican Party is. And in all of these things are like, you know, would make interesting comments, would make truthful comments, but they were avoided. I really think either partially out of fear of retribution by the Republicans and partially out of a desire to keep access, the lines of access open.
Alex, what are your thoughts? What explains these ongoing failures?
Yeah, I would echo a lot of what Mark and Jeet said. I think that there's another element here too, which is maybe less of a value judgment, but just that the mainstream press is set up to cover conflict. And, you know, so if you have a situation like one that is unfolding within the Democratic Party right now, in which there are, you know, divisive and I think increasingly dug in camps, that's a story that these folks can run with. I think what you saw at this convention is this kind of bizarre spectacle in which, you know, people are dancing and celebrating. It's a very sort of jubilant display in between calls for mass deportations and, you know, remaking the federal government. And again, you know, what we've seen is the transformation of, you know, a kind of functional political party into a personality cult. And I think that that's the story here. And one of the things that I think was frustrating about it, to the point that G just made as well, is that, you know, this is the third one of these that we've had under Donald Trump, and it was markedly different. The first one was obviously overtaken by a sort of floor fight at the start of it. Second one was the COVID convention, which is a little different. And now you have a convention that actually does bookend the transformation of the Republican Party into a complete personality cult. But it wasn't covered that way at all. It was covered as, here are all the Republicans, they're so united. But the story there is really about the sort of exile of most of the party's sort of Brahmin figures over the last 6 or 7 years.
Can you all also talk about what really stood out for you? And we're already getting some emails, so I want to give out the phone number. Today, we're talking about why the media are still failing to cover the Republican Party's far-right agenda. You heard after the assassination attempt that we're going to see a different Donald Trump, that we're going to see unity. We did a whole show about coverage of the assassination attempt as if political violence is new, and we know it's not. There are so many good stories out there about how even Republicans are afraid to stand up to Trump because they fear for their families' lives. I mean, this is serious stuff we're talking about here. We're not even talking about guns. How did the 20-year-old get a gun? And what does this say about our society that a 20-year-old would try to carry this out? What are your thoughts about media coverage? What where we are right now? What stands out for you? It's not just broadcast media. I read a couple of those newspaper headlines that are out this morning. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Mark, what really stood out for you at the convention, and what really do you think deserves more headlines, more attention?
Well, I think just from a media standpoint that the media has just learned so little in the last 8 years, and it's just incredibly disappointing. I mean, 8 years ago you could understand that they were overwhelmed by the constant lying of Donald Trump, and that I was in the news media, so I knew that we really are much more comfortable saying, well, here's what Democrats said, here's what Republicans said, you know, you guys decide, and treating them as equals. But then we have one political party systematically lying about almost everything. And it just overwhelmed the news media. And I understand that in 2016. I don't understand that in 2024. And there's several lessons here. Now, you don't, when you fact check, you know, they just let them lie about these things, and they didn't fact check them in real time. And it's obvious that if you don't fact check in real time, you might as well not fact check just about. I mean, this writing an article 3 days later doesn't do it. CNN bringing Daniel Dale on at the end of the night, you know, 45 minutes after the event, which is what they did in the debate, and bring him on an hour or so after to fact check everything. That's after everyone has tuned out by then. They've all either gone to bed or they're watching Two and a Half Men or something. I mean, they're not paying attention. So the lie worked. And with constant liars, if you have to put them on television, and you don't, by the way, but if you do put them on television, you've got to stop. You can't do it in live because they lie too fast and they lie too frequently. You need to tape them and be able to stop the tape and explain the lie. Because, I mean, the Republicans have been running this game, this con game on the press for, you know, 8 or 9 years now. And it's embarrassing. And here we are 3.5 months before an election, and the press hasn't learned a damn thing.
Mm. Jeet, what would you add?
Well, I just think it's so interesting that the message of unity was actually like given lie to just by, you know, Trump's kind of tone. Politico had a piece like just a few days ago that was a part of this new narrative, and it talked about Trump having a new tone, being serene, spiritual, existential. Now, I seriously doubt if Trump could spell existential, let alone have that state. But I mean, and then, you know, once we had the convention, it was the same old Trump. He, you know, referred to the late great Hannibal Lecter. He referred to crazy Nancy Pelosi. You know, this was not like a new Trump at all. So at some level, like, I have to say, it's not just that they were uncritically accepting the Republican statements, but like there's such a discordance between the narrative that was trying to be put out that this is a new, mature Trump, that he was graced by a bullet, change transformed him as Christ was transformed on the cross, and the actual, you know, Trump that we saw, which is, I'm sorry, the same old man.
Alex, what would you like to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, on the theme of unity, one of the things that stood out to me, and I actually do think the press has learned maybe a little more than Mark does, but you saw this kind of discordance in the unity message. So, you know, back in 2016, I'm sure Jeet remembers me going on about this in editorial meetings at the time, but you know, there was this constant drumbeat about the Donald Trump pivot, that he was going to somehow be sort of humbled or chastened by the experience of running for office or serving as president, mm-hmm. and he would start to behave more normally. And this happened for a very, very, very long time, because there's always this expectation that he would somehow be changed and normalized by his proximity to power. And that obviously never happened. And not only did it not happen, but the lesson that he took from the early failures of his presidency is that he actually needed to surround himself with even more loyalists, that he needed to bend the federal government to his will. And this is how you end up with something like Project 2025, which is a kind of systematic way of doing that. But to move this to the present, you know, in some ways, the sort of unity drumbeat we saw post-assassination attempt resembled this, except it sort of lacked the second half of it. There was never any expectation that it would be different. It was just a sort of this idea that there would be a kind of superficial tonal change. And Trump himself basically acknowledged this. You know, after Biden spoke on Sunday, you know, he just posted a kind of, you know, unite now message, you know, in all caps. And we know what unity means for Trump. It means unite behind me, you know, unite behind me, the sort of chosen one, the leader of this great political movement that has now completely subsumed the GOP. But, you know, in coverage of it, it was just this kind of weird empty calories unity that, yes, Trump might, there might be a soft focus Trump. And you say, well, okay, so what? And no one in the press could actually answer that question. In some ways, it was more embarrassing than, you know, Van Jones's infamous "today he became president," because at least there, you know, Van had a kind of theory about what was going to happen next. And no one in the press has been able to actually say, well, okay, Trump is going to be a uniter now. Well, what does that mean?
But Alex, don't you think that part of the problem is that the lot of the media wants the narrative supplied to them by the right in this case? Or somebody, they just, I mean, it seems like that, like there's a lot of spoon feeding that goes on right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely true. I mean, in some ways, that's a tale of, you know, access journalism as old as time. And you just kind of get people that have been parroting this. A lot of the stories about this were just kind of embarrassing. And you knew that, you know, you could dangle your keys in front of these people and they'd be entertained. But I, you know, I think that there's another level here in which, in some sense, which is, I think, more depressing to me, that the media is tired of covering the authoritarian threat of Donald Trump, that they are desperate to have a kind of new angle here that's not just the sort of Sturm und Drang of it all. And so having this promise of something, you know, at least it's different, you know. And, I mean, I think some of the coverage of Biden recently, well, I think it's completely warranted, has had a kind of similar energy, right? Like, people are tired of Donald Trump, the old Donald Trump. So maybe we'll get a new one. And, you know, that's wishful thinking, as we all know.
Today, we are talking about why the media are failing to cover the Republican Party's far-right agenda, why they really have failed on the Republican National Convention. We're joined by Alex Shepard, senior editor of The New Republic, Jeet Heer, national affairs correspondent for The Nation. Mark Jacob is a freelance writer and a former Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sunday editor at the Chicago Sun-Times. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We are getting a lot of emails on this. A lot of people are saying, what do we do about this? Carol in Oakland says, the media are bending over backwards to act like Trump is normal. This is so dangerous. How can we confront them and make them admit that Trump and his candidacy are not normal? Anne Marie Booth, please discuss constructive approaches. Vicky, why does mainstream media fail and fail? Because they're married to both sides-ism, and there are not two American sides. There's a fascist Hungarian side and an American side. The part the mainstream media play in the destruction of democracy is invisible to them, therefore. We've got some related callers, so let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Do we have Greg? Well, Greg wanted to ask, how do we make the press do the right thing? So what are your thoughts on this, Mark? You have been a journalist for many, many years. You are openly now talking about what you saw when you were at the Chicago Tribune. What can people do about what they're seeing in the media and hearing in the media?
I think they need to support good media, and there is some of that. Like, I mean, if you want to support good journalism, give some money to ProPublica, for example, who exposed the corruption on the U.S. Supreme Court when the Washington Post and New York Times had just not done it for decades. So you can support good media. There is some out there. Support, you know, local news, which is just dying on the vine right now. But as far as how you can affect the election, I think it's too late for that. I think the media has decided that it's going to do what it's going to do. I think people who want to make a difference in the election need to talk to their family and friends. The most influential thing in people's idea of who to vote for is not what they read in the newspaper yesterday. It's their family and friends. And so I think individual people talking to people they care about the election and not, you know, being worried about having a big fight with them or how it's going to just, I mean, in a kindly, constructive way, appealing to people to not vote for fascism, to me, is it might be the most constructive thing they can do.
Mark, does it matter if people write to editors? After J.D. Vance's speech, I heard someone on NPR, I don't remember who it was, but it was someone who works at NPR who said he sounded softer around the edges. Is it worth writing to editors,
yes,
saying, we don't need this kind of commentary. We want facts. Who is this guy? What is he planning to do? What has he done?
Yes, complaining about the news media sometimes does work. Editors pay attention to that. And I mean, to me, I feel like the right wing has been working the refs for a very long time. And successfully. So, yeah, pressure does matter. I've been tracking the New York Times changing its headlines because the New York Times will write these very vague headlines. Like when, for example, here's an example. Trump, when he called his opponents vermin, you know, using Nazi-style language, the New York Times initial headline was Trump takes Veterans Day speech in an entirely different direction. Which, you know, if the fact is you're not going to put the word vermin in there and that you're just going to make it some sort of here's a new wrinkle kind of thing is shocking. And everyone, including me, complained on social media. And within like about an hour or two, they'd rewritten the headline. And I don't know if they did it because it was just a crappy headline or because they saw the uproar. But I have a feeling it might have been both.
What are your thoughts, Jeet? What can people do about this? Because the fact of the matter is we need a healthy broadcast media. It's not just broadcast, but we need the media to do their jobs, especially at a time like this.
Well, I mean, I absolutely support what Mark said earlier about, like, you know, people need to be good consumers and really support good independent media that's more critical, as well as, like, you know, making objections known. I think the other thing is, like, not to be too pessimistic about the impact. I mean, the interesting thing about Trump is his support doesn't seem to have really grown despite, you know, this sort of soft sell media that he got, is getting now and that he got on many points of his presidency. I think the majority of the public has always sought through him. And so I think people need to understand that, you know, this propaganda effort only really works on the converted, and that if they're critical and they actually like pay attention to what they can see with their own eyes, that's very valuable. And then you can take that that knowledge, that critical knowledge, and apply it to like political organizing and working with people. So don't think that this is necessarily fooling all the people all the time. It absolutely is not.
Alex, what would you add?
Yeah, I mean, I would really echo what Jeet just said, the last point about 20,000%. I think one of the things that's tricky about this is that I think the media environment in this country is terrible, and it's been terrible for a very long time. But with Trump, I think there's a kind of working backwards that sometimes happens that I think can cause, you know, perhaps undue frustration that I think causes people to not act, which is just that, you know, he is one of the most inexplicably persistent figures in American politics, and media coverage of him is bad. And I think people often tie the two together. But to Jeet's point, you know, his polling support has been remarkably similar for the last since 2016. It's basically in the low 40s, which by American political standards is very bad. And I think that, you know, movement building, as we saw in 2020, working, you know, in a sort of a broader way, a respectful way with other people, works very effectively. You know, I talk to voters a fair amount, And they're not stupid, to Jeet's point. Like, they understand this, the nature of this person, and they see through him. And, you know, I think that given a proactive case for protecting American values, American democracy, they respond to that. And I think that, again, one of the other problems that we have right now, though, is that this is a media environment that is more dominated by large corporate interests than has ever been true in my, you know, relatively short lifetime. But, you know, at this point, you know, it's possible that almost 10% of the journalists in this country work at the New York Times. Cable news is still dominant. Independent media, meanwhile, has just been absolutely ravaged over the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, I think that supporting smaller independent outlets, particularly ones that embrace reporting, progressive journalism, that makes a huge difference. And again, I think also if there are local outlets in your community, particularly independent ones here in New York, we have a great one called Hellgate. Supporting those types of folks makes a huge difference because if you're trying to build a pro-democracy movement, you need reporting on the ground in people's communities.
We're going to take a quick break. Today, we are asking why major media are failing to adequately cover the Republican Party's far-right agenda and what we can do about this. We're going to actually talk about issues after the break because, you know, we don't do the horse race. Of course, that's everywhere. We're going to talk about actual issues and why that's not getting more attention. Today, we're joined by Alex Shepard, senior editor of The New Republic, Jeet Heer, national affairs correspondent for The Nation. Mark Jacob is a former Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sunday editor at the Chicago Sun-Times. And he writes a column about media. He's a major media critic now. You can follow him on social media. You can follow all of our guests, of course, on social media. Find more about their work at kalw.org. Click on news, and then you will find your call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. If you'd like to join today's conversation about media coverage of this political moment, why are they failing so badly? Major media across the board. Yes, independent media is important, but we need also a very strong broadcast media. And in many cases, some of the politicians will only go on the Sunday shows. We've had so many reporters on this show who try to get interviews with politicians about various issues, and they can't. So it's important for someone like Meet the Press anchor, Kristen Welker, to ask the tough questions. That is why, you know, we talk about these shows. We can't just say they're lost, forget it, because it's crucial. So we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts? 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Mark Jacob is a media critic who spent many years as the Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sunday editor at the Chicago Sun-Times. Jeet Heer is national affairs correspondent for The Nation and host of the weekly Nation podcast, The Time of Monsters. He also writes the monthly column Morbid Symptoms. Alex Shepard is senior editor of The New Republic. We're going to talk about a couple issues, and then we will go back to calls and emails. I want to talk about abortion, because over the past month, we have heard, you know, people like NPR's Mara Liasson say that Trump is moving to the center on abortion. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, because of Trump's Supreme Court justices overturning Roe, abortion is now illegal or heavily restricted in half of the country. The Daily Beast had a piece in September 2021 called J.D. Vance Defends Texas Abortion Ban, Calls Rape Inconvenient. J.D. Vance told Spectrum News that, quote, in Texas, they're trying to make it easier for babies to be born. Kira Butler had a piece at Mother Jones just yesterday called At the RNC Prayer Breakfast, Speaker Said the Quiet Part Out Loud. The party is going to be a pro-life, pro-family, pro-faith party. So Trump says, give it to the states. Well, the obvious response should be, okay, well, the states are outlawing abortion. Women and girls have no choice but to travel. And if they can't do that, they are being forced to have children that for many reasons they do not want. Mark, can you talk about this? I mean, the conversation on abortion has just drastically shifted.
Well, it's another case where I think the media is getting conned. I mean, this idea that, you know, that the Republican Party is moderating on abortion. Well, come on, clearly not. And the guy who supposedly is moderating the Republican Party is the one who got rid of the Roe versus Wade decision in the first place. So he's clearly not pro, you know, choice. And what people need to understand in a more sophisticated way is that there are a lot of ways that the right wing can ban abortion nationally with even without passing another bill in Congress. People should Google abortion and Comstock Act to understand that. There's a old law in the book called the Comstock Act that bans shipping. It regulates use of the post office. And the Comstock Act specifically regulates and bans mailing of abortion materials. It has not been enforced. It's been widely ignored for decades. And so the real scary thing to me is that without passing any kind of a national ban in Congress, just simply by regulation or by enforcing an old antiquated law, a Trump administration could in effect virtually ban abortion in this country.
Well, that needs to be talked about on a regular basis. And then to think about all of the women who, you know, are 6 months into their pregnancy, the name is chosen and they have a fetal anomaly. And right. The doctor says, I'm sorry, I cannot help you because I'm afraid I'm going to jail. I mean, these brave women are sharing their stories. Why aren't we seeing more of those stories played over and over again? Alex or Jeet, do you have anything to add on how the conversation on abortion has shifted so drastically in the media?
I mean, I think with Trump, one of the things that he has kind of weirdly benefited from is his, historical, at least, ambivalence on the issue. And this is true about many issues, but the press is not really equipped to cover policy apparatuses or the people that actually make these kinds of decisions. And those people have an enormous amount of power in the Trump administration because Trump only really cares about a handful of things. And most of those things are somewhat insane, like that 10% tariff. But that, you know, means that there are people like these cronies at the Heritage Foundation and others who care very, very deeply about banning abortion in this country and have been working behind the scenes to do this for 50 years and have largely succeeded, and they will continue to do so. And I think that, you know, the thing that frustrates me about coverage here is that I think in general coverage of a post-Roe America has been pretty good, but it's been mostly done piecemeal, right? So you say, okay, well, you know, North Dakota has basically banned all abortions, or, you know, then it moves to Iowa or somewhere else. And you get this kind of mosaic, but very rarely do you see the whole picture. And that's being contrasted, I think, with a president who is making bogus claims. And, you know, you can look back to 2016 when he said, you know, and the justices that he appointed also said that Roe was the sort of settled law of the land. Well, it didn't happen that way. You can't trust him on this. You know the people that are working on the policy. And I think the lack of coverage there of what a huge threat this is. And again, I think to Mark's point, that the fact that tools already exist, big problem.
And you know, there's also the Mifepristone ruling, you know, in the Supreme Court, where they allowed the abortion medication to continue to be used. But that was just a tentative decision. I mean, that was based on standing, on whether the people who had filed the original lawsuit had standing. The Supreme Court really has not ruled on that made a final decision on that. And if you end up in the, you know, with Trump winning and, you may very well find that's another way in which the right wing, without passing a single act in Congress, can ban abortion.
Yeah, actually, I want to build on what Alex and Mark are saying. There's a real legal infrastructure that's in place, and that Trump and Vance, if they win, will absolutely bolster. They will continue to allow the Federalist Society to pick judges. And the way that infrastructure works is that you have the lower courts that experiment with different ways of banning things, and the Supreme Court sometimes will say that's too far, but come back to us with another ruling that's within the parameters that we can work with. And they do that, and that's going to continue to happen. So I think on abortion, I mean, the main thing is, Trump appointed three of the judges that overturned Roe, and he will continue to be able to appoint judges, including possibly two or three more Supreme Court justices, depending on who retires. And that these justices will be they don't need to overturn Roe, but they can certainly overturn many other like laws relating to birth control that will like limit Roe. And the final point I'd make is the whole rhetoric of states' rights doesn't get questioned enough, because like, you know, in American federal system, and J.D. Vance has said this, you know, like he's upset that women in one state, they could be flown to another state to get abortion, and the right is very upset at this, and there's not enough discussion of how, you know, this states' right excuse does not is used to avoid the fact that there has been a real attempt at a national ban.
Right, and J.D. Vance has said he wants abortion to be illegal nationally. Going back to independent media, Sean Musgrave of The Intercept had a good piece a few days ago called On Abortion, J.D. Vance is the Bridge Between Trump and Project 2025. Project 2025 and Vance agree the Dobbs decision is just the beginning. He reports that before the assassination attempt, Trump went on Fox and said Project 2025 went way too far on abortion. And of course, he's saying this because they know that the majority of Americans support abortion and reproductive rights. A few days later, he chose J.D. Vance to be his running mate. He's got a history of strong opposition to abortion. In the past 48 hours, according to The Intercept, J.D. Vance has tried to backpedal on his abortion stances, including by scrubbing an end abortion section on his Senate campaign website, which now redirects to a fundraising page for the Trump-Vance ticket. Until he got the nod, the site distilled Vance's, quote, 100% pro-life views. So there you have it. It's all there. That's what I don't understand, Mark. Not to toot our own horn here, we have a very small staff. It doesn't take us long to find these sites, these articles, and these facts. These shows have hundreds of editors and researchers, and yet they could just read from articles to show that it's not an opinion. This is just a fact from an article, and yet they just don't do it enough.
Well, there's a lot of code switching on the right where they will say one thing to their followers, you know, like they pretty much signal to their followers that they want to ban abortion, but then they will code switch into to where they're talking to a more general audience, and then they'll start talking about moderation and about, oh, well, we just brought it back to the states, or as Trump ridiculously says, all the legal experts and everyone wanted us to bring it back to the states, which, you know, is utterly ridiculous. And then Trump also, I guess the thing about the abortion issue that most shocks me, though, is that Trump keeps on talking about post-birth abortion. And you may not know what that is because it doesn't exist. It's not a real thing, but it's a regular talking point on the right. And Trump has been saying it for months, that that babies are born and they're just left in the corner to die and stuff. I mean, just outrageously false things. And I feel like the news media have not been offended enough by that. They have not aggressively gone after it. One of the things I like to say is that fact checking isn't enough. We need fact crusading. We need the news media to be so offended that propagandists are lying to their audience that they push back aggressively, that they confront them at the time they say it, and they go after them until they get the facts straight. And you're not seeing that. You're seeing too passive a press on stuff like that.
So I would maybe push back a little bit there. And I think that I want the press to be adversarial. I think that they should be uncovering facts. They should be, you know, doing reporting that reveals exactly how these types of policies affect people. But I think that you also need an opposition party that works here too. And I think that one of the things that, you know, and that's part of the media's job too, is to accurately cover political conflict where there should be political conflict. And I think that too much of the time over the last 10 years, you know, I think that there is an expectation that the press will rush in to fill that void. I don't necessarily think that the press always needs to go in and sort of, you know, with a big legal pad and say, here are all the things you got wrong, sir. You know, the Daniel Dale approach for me, I don't always see the utility of it. And I think that one of the things that we're seeing here, and I think you saw this with Trump's ridiculous abortion comments that he made at the debate is that if you do not have a political infrastructure, or in this case, a candidate slash president who can aggressively make that case, then it sort of falls through the wayside. I don't necessarily think that it's the press's job to always come in and put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And what we've seen, I think, here is just that the Democratic Party has been very, very passive and quiet in vocalizing some of its opposition to some of the most dangerous elements of this person.
Alex, I'm glad you brought this up, because a few times this week we have asked our guests, why is this race even close? Why are the Democrats losing to these extreme anti-abortion Republicans? I mean, how did we get to this place? Of course, that takes an hour or more to answer, but I think this is a question that really deserves asking. I wish some of the MSNBC anchors would ask some of these Democrats this question when they come on. Of course, they never do, because it's always a softball interview.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the clearest explanation here is just that voters have been well ahead of the Democratic Party elite and being frustrated with Joe Biden as an administrator and seeing, you know, you can call them unfair or not, things like the pullout from Afghanistan. I think more unfairly, Russia's invasion of Ukraine as being evidence that he is too old to handle the rigors of the job. And I think that that was shown very clearly, because the, you know, one of the, I would say, three most important jobs of the president is to communicate effectively and clearly. And he has not been able to aggressively push that message. And I think the party has struggled to build infrastructure around him to replace an ineffective messenger with several. And I think what we've seen over the last 3 weeks is an enormous and depressing breakdown of party infrastructure that resembles what we saw in the Republican Party in 2016. But I think the lack of effective communication here is a big thing. I think that the Biden team has done an amazing job. The industrial policy of this administration is the best that we have seen since FDR. But communicating that to voters is pretty difficult to do, actually. And I think when people are struggling economically, as many people are through inflation, you know, being told about good industrial policy requires some finesse. And I think that that's the sort of cleanest explanation here. But the other thing, too, I think to Jeet's point, this is the point that gives me hope, is that Donald Trump's floor is very high for a political candidate, but his ceiling is very, very low. And I think that if you can put together a cogent and clear argument about what the dangers that he poses are, and again, people do not like plutocratic Republicans, which, you know, and they don't like billionaires, then you can win. And I think that that's the position the Democrats are in right now.
Building on that, I think one thing that we've seen is very interesting is amid that both this media failure and Democratic Party messaging failure, I think people have been stepping up. I think the whole Project 2025, as I understand it, like that really percolated up from the grassroots. Like, I think there were, like, you know, some very good reports in the independent media, and then people started talking about it, and I think politicians picked up on it, and now it's becoming more of an issue. I think the same thing has been true in a lot of the abortion stuff, that you've seen a lot of grassroots activism that has made this front and center, and that has taken up filling the vacuum that is created both by the mainstream media and the frankly Democratic Party political elite. So I mean, I really do think that if you're talking about solutions, that is the way forward. That I think that a more engaged citizenry that is aware of these issues, that has not been fooled by Trump, that is aware of the threat to democracy, and actively pushes their lawmakers to take up these issues, I think that that is one way forward.
Mark, your thoughts, and then we will get to calls.
I agree with all that. I just feel like, just to push back a little bit, on what Alex was saying, I do feel like that just because the Democratic Party is not doing its job parrying the lies of the Republican Party does not absolve the news media of being defenders of the facts. And I feel like the debate was just such a stark example of that, where, you know, you had the CNN anchors acting like potted plants, just not, you know, just asking a question, getting an answer that had nothing to do with the question, and then saying, "Thank you, Mr. President." And it just, the absence of fact checking when you're talking about the issues is toxic. I mean, it just means that lies get purchase. It just means that they and I just feel, I mean, and this is just a honest disagreement, but I just feel like the news media need to be responsible for defending the facts.
Today we're joined by Mark Jacob, former Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune, Jeet Heer, national affairs correspondent for The Nation, Alex Shepard, senior editor of The New Republic. I just wanted to share a few things that came down in the last couple of hours. A Biden campaign chair, Jen O'Malley Dillon, reaffirms that President Biden is staying in the race. Hakeem Jeffries said the same thing. Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gave a live Instagram talk last night. She is saying that she wants Biden to stay in the race. She is saying that the powers that be do not want Kamala Harris on the ticket. So she says, you're all asking for Biden to drop out, thinking Kamala will be the appointed nominee. She says people behind the scenes are saying they do not want that. So that was fascinating to watch. I'd love to get your comments on that. But first, so many people have been patiently waiting. So let's hear from a few callers and then we'll get responses. Maurice in Oakland. Hi, thank you for holding.
Thank you. Good morning. Couple of points. Rich media, poor democracy. That's one of your former guests, a professor at the University of Illinois. I think his name is Robert McKenzie. Secondly, all over the world, media is attached to political parties. Here, the media curries favor to gain access. If you took the Democratic Party as currently constituted and transposed it to a post-industrial Western European democracy, you'd be a center-right party. Not good enough. And lastly, to quote Paul Wellstone, concentrated economic power means concentrated political power. That applies to the media. In other words, if money and votes are equal, some votes are more equal than others, and if money equals free speech, some free speech is more equal than other free speech.
Thank you so much. And if you can keep your comments short, I'm so sorry. We're almost out of time. Let's go to Pamela in Oakland. Thank you for holding.
Hi, this is Pamela. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, first I want to really thank you for all of you questioning how you covered the Republican conference debate, whatever you want to call it, horror show. And I have not been able to listen to the news since that debate of almost a month ago, where the Biden bashing has been nonstop, including on NPR, and the gaslighting has been horrendous. I cannot listen to NPR or KQED anymore. And KLW today has gained me back as a listener because you finally are asking the right questions. The tax cuts, according to this committee on the budget, if he gets reelected, this horrible, horrible man, Trump, will go up to $4.6 trillion just thanks to those tax cuts. You have so much to cover. I'm a senior and a woman. I could lose my Social Security, which I rely on. And as a woman, I am deeply offended, as I was part of the movement to secure our rights back in the 60s and 70s, to no longer see that women have any rights to their own bodies. This is so serious. We are half the electorate. Let's stand up, media, and talk about the real issues. No voting rights. All of the, you know the issues. So thank you for taking my call. Please stop Biden bashing.
Well, thank you for the call, Pamela. We did in our live coverage last night mention a new report that found billionaires have doubled their wealth since the 2017 Trump tax cuts. And I know that Social Security is so important to so many of our, all of us, but so many of our listeners, and we're definitely going to do shows about that. I'm so sorry we don't have more time to take calls. We have so many emails. We're going to definitely continue these discussions. Final thoughts from all of you. We're getting so many more emails saying, where should we go for honest and thoughtful journalism? What will it take for the media to really meet this moment? Final thoughts from you, Mark. We have about a minute left.
Oh, well, unfortunately, I think you have to pick and choose, and you have to read a variety of things, and you have to actually pay attention to bylines, which most people don't. And because there are good writers at the New York Times and there are not good writers. So I just being more sophisticated and more diversified, I think, will make people more informed consumers.
Thank you. Jeet, final thoughts? A minute?
Yeah, no, I think a sort of diverse media diet is very important. I think it's actually becoming a little bit harder just because of some of the changes that are going on in social media and search engines that are actually making it harder for people to get news. But I mean, I think in some ways you have to be part of the own solution. I think people should also be trying to do some of their own journalism, especially on a local level, because I think that's where journalism is really dying, and it's a real problem.
Alex, final thoughts? Is Alex still there?
Yes. Sorry. If you have an independent outlet that's local, support them immediately, because I think that's where this all starts. And I think that if we can build this sort of true independent progressive media, it's going to start with small groups of local reporters.
And can I ask you all? We have still 1 minute left. What are you planning to cover in the next few months? What's the big story that you want to do, Alex?
Oh, I think that, you know, this is an existential moment in this country's history. I think we're seeing the two parties in one that's fully become a personality cult and the other that's in mid-collapse. I think that we also have a Democratic Party that has not yet offered a real vision for governance in the next for the next 4 years. So I'm going to be asking a lot of questions about what the Democratic Party is doing to stop this authoritarian movement, but also what they want the country to actually look like.
And Jeet, what are you working on, just briefly?
I think the plutocracy and the, you know, real the way in which Peter Thiel, for example, seems to have taken over the Republican Party is a very big story, and I'm looking more and more into that.
Great, thank you. And Mark, anything you'd like to tell us about what you're working on?
My newsletter is called Stop the Presses. Stopthepresses.news is how you get to it. And it's weekly, it's free. And I guess what I'm going to be writing about a lot in the next few months is about people coming to grips with what I view as a fascist threat to this country. And people don't like the word fascist, but that's what it is. And when you look at history, it's an authoritarian movement that's a threat to our democracy. And I guess I'm going to be writing a lot about whether people can come to grips with it.
Mark Jacob writes the Stop the Presses newsletter. Jeet Heer is national affairs correspondent for The Nation. Alex Shepard is senior editor of The New Republic. Thank you all so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your Calls Media Roundtable.